I'm Mark Feinsand, executive reporter for MLB.com. I had a chance recently to sit down with Royals general manager Dayton Moore at Surprise Stadium in Arizona. We discussed what he learned from John Schuerholz, dealing with the loss of Yordano Ventura, and what it meant to him to instill a winning culture in Kansas City. Enjoy. Dayton, you were born in Wichita, Kansas, grew up as a Royals fan. Was working for the Royals always a dream for you?
No. the Royals were my boyhood team. Of course, the Royals were a very easy team to root for. Back in the late 70s and the 80s, they were a model organization and winning on a consistent basis. I naturally followed the Kansas City Royals, and I will say when they had called and requested permission to interview me, at first I never thought I would leave Atlanta, but I wanted to meet with them because I was curious. They were my boyhood team, and I connected with Dave and Dan Glass, and I realized very quickly that Mr. Glass was very frustrated. He was obviously one of the most successful businessmen in the history of our country, running Walmart for many years, and he was frustrated. He was embarrassed. He was very open to doing what we felt we would need to do to build this organization from the ground up. And so that was intriguing to me. So I began to think about this opportunity. And about 10 days later, after the job was offered, we decided to come to Kansas City.
You graduated from George Mason University. Mm-hmm. Spent 4 years there as an assistant baseball coach.
Yeah.
Did you think at the time that coaching would be your future?
Yeah, you know what? I wanted to coach. I wanted to be a college coach. Once my college baseball career was over, I signed with an independent team and was released out of there. And Billy Brown, the head coach at George Mason, asked me to come back and coach, which he knew that was part of my plans. When he recruited me, I told him that, you know, when I'm done playing, I want to coach someday, and I would like for you to consider me. And he said he would, and he was true to his word. But the Braves called. They asked me if I was interested in being an area scout, and I said no. They called me back 48 hours later, convinced me to go down and meet with them in Atlanta, and they offered me the position. And then I decided I was gonna do it, and I was gonna do it just for 4 years and get back into college coaching. And then one thing led to another, and I enjoyed so much who I was working with. I was learning a great deal. I had great mentors in my life, like Paul Snyder and Roy Clark and Bill LaJoy and Jose Martinez and Jim Beacham and John Schuerholz and Bobby Cox. So naturally, I was learning a lot and I was growing a lot. And I was thinking about the game in ways that I'd never thought before. So it just motivated me and stimulated me to want to do more in the game.
As one thing led to another, as you say, you go from scout, assistant director mm-hmm. of scouting, assistant director of player development, director of international scouting, and eventually director of player personnel development. As you're moving through the ranks here,
yeah,
was there an eye on, I want to be a GM someday?
No, there really wasn't. I've always tried to have a laser-type focus on the moment and what you're trying to accomplish each day. I've never really thought too much about the future, and I think it's important to have a relentless focus on the fundamentals of the game, on the field and off the field. And to do that, it requires a laser-type focus each day. The first two opportunities I had to interview as a GM, I decided not to do it because I was just so focused on what I was doing in scouting and player development. I loved the people I worked with. I never envisioned myself ever leaving the Atlanta Braves. So I never really thought about being a GM.
You ultimately get promoted to assistant GM mm-hmm. Under John Schuerholz.
Yeah.
What did you learn most from him?
Well, John is a, first of all, John's an unbelievable competitor. He relies deeply on his people. He's a great listener. He has a way filtering all the information and the opinions of people, and putting a plan together based on that information. But John was always very inclusive towards me. He welcomed me in his inner circle, and for that I'm forever grateful. Because all I've ever wanted to do is learn this game, and grow in this game. And I've never concerned myself with being exposed with what I don't know, because I just want to get better. So I'm hopeful that somebody exposes me every single day of what I don't know, because that puts me in a position to grow and to learn.
You started interviewing with the Red Sox for their GM job November 2005 before withdrawing your name from consideration. What did you take from that process?
Well, to me, it was the first time I ever really thought about becoming a GM, because I really enjoyed the interview process. And so it was just really the first time I thought about becoming a GM, truthfully. And, I enjoyed the baseball people. And, obviously the market, Boston is one of the greatest baseball towns in the history of our game. So that was obviously intriguing, and but that's primarily it. I mean, it's really the first time I began to think about, it might be fun to be a part of a culture in as the GM.
Less than a year later, you become the GM for the Royals. A lot of people that you sought counsel from advised you not to take the job.
Yeah.
What appealed to you most about taking over a team that hadn't experienced success for about 20 years?
Well, we knew it was going to be an unbelievable challenge, Mark. And, I kept thinking that I kept going back to Mr. Glass's openness. And I would say not his openness necessarily. His openness, yes, but his brokenness of – we want to build a model organization. And that was intriguing to me, to be able to maybe come here and have, a hand in creating a culture and an environment, and to breathe life back into a franchise that, as we all know, once was a model franchise. So to have that opportunity to breathe life back into a fan base. And, when we came here, I didn't realize it until we got here, but, we'd lost a generation of Royals fans. And how did I know that? Well, when I would watch our fans enter the ballpark from my office, the only time the young kids would come is we were playing the Yankees or the Red Sox. And their parents... parents or grandparents would have on Royals hats or George Brett or Willie Wilson or Frank White jerseys, and their kids would have like Dustin Pedroia and Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz. And I knew they weren't coming from Boston or New York. I mean, they were Kansas City kids. And so that was hurtful to me. That was extremely bothersome, and became a great source of motivation to put players on this field that, and in our community, that would connect with our fans and ultimately guide our success and grow the game in Kansas City.
Dave Dombrowski, who turned around 119-loss team in Detroit, I read he offered you the following advice when you became the GM.
Yeah.
Quote, do things the right way. If you run out of time, you run out of time.
Yeah.
How much did that stick with you during the early years?
A lot. It motivated me to always do the right thing for what's best for the franchise, what's best for the Kansas City Royals. Of course, John implemented that in us in Atlanta. Every decision you make, what's best for the Atlanta Braves. And but when you're struggling and you're losing, we all know that it's human nature to begin to protect self more than the good of the team. And so that was a reminder that everything that we do each and every day is we got to do what's best for the Kansas City Royals and lay the foundation for success and continue to grow it through scouting and player development. and remember to engage our fans, be transparent with our fans, and in a way that's going to draw them to the Kansas City Royals. You know, we would speak all over the community 3-4 times a week, whether it be morning breakfast, lunch meetings, coffees, churches, everywhere. And we wanted to really be out in the community. We knew that was going to be important, especially for the Midwest. But the fact that we would engage and have those discussions, it created a lot of conversation. And people may not agree with what we were doing as an organization, or wanted to move much quicker, or didn't like the signings or the moves of the general manager, but they were following us, and they were debating us, and they were, and that's a good thing. We wanted them engaged in Kansas City Royals baseball.
Trust the process has become mm-hmm. a very big cliche in sports in the recent years.
Yeah.
But in your position, is it important to do just that?
It is. We tried to just have a laser-type focus on each day, just trying to get better each day. And I would say, guys, let's just try to get better each and every day. And then if we maintain that approach and trust that process, someday we might wake up and be good.
You traded Zach Greinke to Milwaukee, part of a 6-player deal, brought back Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar in that trade.
Yeah.
Was it tough dealing a young homegrown ace, or did you see that as a good opportunity to acquire multiple players that you could use as a part of your future?
We did. You battle on two fronts. You realize how important Zach is to our fans, our community, our fan base, and the fact that people loved watching him compete every fifth day. But we also knew that the best thing for the Kansas City Royals was perhaps to multiply. You trade Zach Greinke and perhaps multiply with what we would get in return. We knew that we had an outstanding young catcher emerging. We knew we had a third baseman and a first baseman, Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer, on the wing or on the interior part of the diamond, at first and at third. And we had Alex Gordon and Billy Butler, two young hitters that were now experiencing a point in time in their lives where, in their careers, where we felt they would start being consistent producing players. But we didn't have a shortstop, and we really didn't have a center field prospect. So we tried to execute deals that would get us back maybe a center fielder, maybe a shortstop. And we were fortunate to execute that to get both. And, you know, the interesting thing about that is when we had acquired Yonesky Betancourt a few years ago at the trade deadline, which we felt at the time was an upgrade over Tony Pena Jr., who had done a really good job for us in 2007, but was struggling in 2008. Without the execution of that deal and getting Yonesky Betancourt here in Kansas City, we can't execute the deal to get Alcides Escobar. So it was Zach Greinke and Alcides Escobar together that brought us Lorenzo and Alcides. Of course, Jake Odorizzi was part of that deal, which we later were able to move in a deal to get Wade Davis and James Shields along with Will Myers, or trade Will Myers.
Off the beaten path for 1 second, Kansas City is probably best known for its barbecue, so I have to ask you, what's your barbecue joint of choice out there?
You know, I like them all. I know that's probably what you're supposed to say. I'm not a picky eater. I never have been. I've never really spent much time, you know, but I like them all. I really do. I think you can't go wrong.
They're all pretty good, right?
They're all good. You can't go wrong. I mean, Joe's is right near our house. Gates is right near our house, so Jack Stacks is near our house, so we just kind of go with what's convenient. But
someone has the shortest line.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. Whoever's got the shortest line.
Every team at this point in the majors has an analytics department. Mm-hmm. Do you think teams are out there now looking for the next big thing?
I'm sure there are. I'm very proud of the work that we've done with our analytical department. I grew up in baseball in a very traditional way. I was a college coach and an area scouting supervisor. But I find the advanced metrics, the analytics, fascinating. It's very important to our decision-making process. We use it in all aspects of our organization. And I believe in certainly traditional views, and also, you know, new ideas. And, you know, I feel like we've been able to combine that in a way that has made us stronger. Our departments respect each other's backgrounds in the game and their viewpoint. And so, to me, that's the most important part of our departments, is that they really respect and embrace each other's viewpoints. And because of that, I think we have a great mix of traditional views, traditional baseball views, and analytics. We use it with our medical decisions. We use it with our sports science. We use it with in the draft. We use it in acquiring players in the minor leagues. We use it in advancing players in levels of the minor leagues. We use it for our lineups. We use it for all aspects of our organization, but we blend the two. And what we simply do is, when we have to make an important decision, we get all the groups, all the people together that represent the leaders of the departments, and we sit down and we listen. We ask questions of each other. We listen, and then ultimately either myself or J.J. Pecola or Ned Yost makes a decision.
What do you think, now that analytics have caught up league-wide, what do you think could be the next big competitive advantage area that teams look at?
You know, I mean, obviously sports science is becoming a huge part of what teams are doing. And, I mean, we all understand we're trying to do a better job of understanding human behavior, try to predict human behavior. It's 162 games. There's a lot that goes into the evaluation of your players, but we have a group of people within our front office that every single day are researching and analyzing things for the future. And when we meet on a regular basis. And those are some of the things that we're.
Do you think StatCast is changing the way fans look at the game?
Yeah, I do. I think it's intriguing. I like paying attention to it. It's interesting information to me. I was taught as an area scout, for example. Okay, this isn't about me, but just to give you some background.
Sure.
I mean, I was taught as an area scout. When I'm sitting back here with a radar gun, and Joe Branzell is the one that told me this. Who's in the Hall of Fame? Scouts Hall of Fame. And, he said, when you sit back there with your radar gun, analyze the pitch, and before you look at your gun, predict the speed. So you learn, you train your eyes what a 90 mile an hour fastball looks like. You use your stopwatch, home to first, use your eyes, train yourself to predict the time, and then look at your watch. So that's how I grew up in the game. What I'm getting at is, with StatCast, and I mean, I can sit up there and I can look at the route of the player, especially from our viewpoint. And now we have an idea of what pitch is coming because we can look at it through the television monitor. We know what pitch is going to come. We have all of the spray charts where guys hit the ball. We know what the pitch is coming. And so we know where we should be positioned, but we can also see the first step quickness or the anticipation of the fielder. We have an idea of where guys are going to hit the ball, so we can lock in areas, okay? So that helps you even more as an evaluator. But I think StatCast and some of the advanced technologies that we have out there make it so that the fan that didn't grow up in the game or the person that didn't grow up in the game, I mean, it helps. Of course it does. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you never heard fans talking about exit velocity before the last couple of years.
I like when they get out there and like the lead, where the how far the lead is.
Right.
That helps because you know that, you know, a lot of this, you predict a 12-foot lead and delivery times and pop times from the catcher and, you know, all that good stuff, you know. And I mean, there's a lot of it. It's all interesting. I mean, exit velocity, okay, yeah, hard hit balls. I mean, as an area scout, I'd keep track of where guys centered the bat on the ball in different areas of the strike zone. I'd work hitters out and throw batting practice to him and measure, didn't call it exit velocity, but how he centers the ball on the bat.
Right.
Does he drive the ball to the off gap? And who handles the ball away naturally? And who has recognition? And again, who can take their hands at different areas of the strike zone? And do guys get themselves out? Are they over aggressive? You know, it's just like patience in the batter's box, where guys are afraid to hit or fearful with hitting with two strikes and are fearful of going deep in count and recognition and plate discipline. Well, and you've known this from the very beginning. It's more nature versus nurture. It's hard to teach patience in players. You have to draft them and sign them with that quality. And so we can say, well, you got to teach. Yeah, we understand that. You got to do it. But you're not going to reconceive players. You can't go back into the, you know, they are who they are. And you've got to work within their naturalness as an athlete, as a baseball player, and then blend their naturalness together with, you know, the other group of players. And that's what ultimately puts your team together. And that's why in player development, one of the things I'm always very conscious and leery of, don't work so much on the player's weaknesses that they lose their strengths. They were drafted and signed for a reason. And let's make sure they maintain their strengths. Yeah, let's work on their weaknesses. That's not what I'm saying. But don't spend so much time trying to develop a curveball when it's just not in there, because it's truly a gift. To be able to spin the ball is more of a gift than it is a taught skill. Being able to have patience at the plate is more as a gift than a learned behavior. Can you get better? Of course you can. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. So from 1994 to 2012, the Royals had one season with more than 80 wins.
Okay.
You guys went 81-81 last year, and it was considered a huge disappointment.
Yeah.
How encouraging is it that winning is now expected from this organization and its fan base?
That's where we wanted to ultimately be, and we knew that we had to change the environment, again, re-engage our fans, and make it a place where players hopefully wanted to play and stay. People talk about, prospects a lot. The most important thing to me with your prospects in the minor leagues is the developing or emphasizing the importance of winning and playing together as a team, and to cast aside self for the good of the group. And that's a challenge, because ultimately we're rewarding players in the minor leagues based on individual performance. So there's somewhat of a conflict there, but to me it's you've got to continue to train your players to cast aside self and do everything for the good of the team and the organization. And that's why it's so important that the leaders you have in place, your coaches, your managers, your front office, your instructors, are able to do that themselves. So it's displayed in the right manner to the players, where hopefully they will follow. But it's culture to me. Culture and environment is everything to me.
When the Royals lost Game 7 to the Giants in 2014, did you feel confident that you guys would get another chance?
No, you never. You know how hard it is to get back to that moment. That's why it's so disappointing. Did I know that we would play winning baseball? Absolutely, because I trust in Ned, the coach and staff, and our players and our fans to support our product on the field, but you never know if you're going to get back there. It's just too challenging. I mean, all those years in Atlanta, we won one World Series. We knew it was going to be. It's very hard. A lot has to go your way once the playoffs begin. You need a break or two, and so you don't know. And you know that's how I grew up in the game. So I didn't know we'd get back there. I knew we would play winning baseball. Just got to stay healthy, which we did. You know, and people would ask me about why we would trade Finnegan and Manaea and Reed for Zobrist and Cueto. when we simply knew that we would never sign. First of all, we knew we wouldn't get any draft picks for him because the rules had changed. And people also knew that we weren't going to sign those guys long term. Maybe you got a shot at Zobras, but Gordon's right. a free agent too or whatever. And people said, well, why would you do that? Plus, we know the history of those deals. Often it doesn't mean you're going to the World right. Series. I mean, if the ball doesn't bounce a certain way in Houston, maybe our fate is sealed right. at that moment. But there was a few factors in place there. One, our team was extremely hungry. Two, they were producing at a high level. They were playing as a team and producing at a high level. And three, our projected health was very good, unless something unforeseen happened. But guys were, you know, there wasn't a lot of guys on the trainer's report, and everybody was healthy and what have you. And then the other part of that is we've always, from day one, why we traded Will Myers, why we did what we did, is our plan from day one was to get a group of homegrown players up here and then do everything that we can to support their efforts to win a World Series. And we stayed true to that plan. And so...
The Royals' payroll last year, $135 million, was the highest in franchise history. Yeah. After the season, you suggested it might be scaled back a little bit. Mm-hmm. As you've developed some of these really good players through the years, and now they're in arbitration years and they're approaching free agency, yeah. do the realities of being a small market team start to really set in?
You know, we've never made an excuse for our market. It's more about the player than the money. And we feel strongly about the type of players that we have here. They're winners. They care about being a great teammate. They connect with the fans. But we also know that we won't be able to keep them all. But we've had success with signing a lot of our young homegrown players to long-term contracts. Look, we signed Joaquin Soria to a long-term contract before he made All-Star teams. We signed Zach Greinke to a long-term contract before he was a Cy Young Award winner. We signed Gordo before he was an All-Star. We signed Billy Butler to a long-term contract before he was an All-Star. Alcides Escobar, Salvador Perez were all given long-term contracts before they made All-Star games and won Gold Gloves. Now, the natural question for you is, well, Hosmer's won Gold Gloves and championships and MVPs, and Moose has been to All-Star games, and Kane's been to All-Star games, and they're not signed long-term. Well, it's going to be a challenge for us, but we'll do the best we can to continue to do what we've always done, and that is simply draft to the best of our ability, develop to the best of our ability, continue to be aggressive internationally, and put players on this field each and every night that want to win for each other and our fans.
Given that those guys are all a year away from free agency, does it put more pressure on the team to perform earlier in the season and not let it get to the point where the trade deadline's approaching and it's, are you buyers or sellers?
Mark, I don't think so. I mean, you'd have to ask them. I don't look at it like that because Ned and I have always operated under the same philosophy. Let's just put the best team we can on the field each and every single day. We want to, again, just a complete focus on the day and what we've got to do to win this game. And that's how we've approached it. There's certainly different phases within a major league season where you have to maybe reevaluate some things, adjust your line of thinking as it reflects to a long-term approach. But we're not there yet, so we're not going to allow our minds to enter into that realm.
Kane missed 59 games last year. Moustakas played only 27. Mm-hmm. How important is it to get them back in your lineup this year at full strength?
Big time. You'd have to look this up, Mark, but I think we had a 546 or some winning percentage, maybe 570, something in there when Kane was in the lineup. You know, in the psychology of our team last year, yes, we were coming off a World Series championship. And we got out of the gate okay, and we started having some injuries. When Gordo and Moose collided, the psychology of the team was a little down. Then we got through that. We didn't play good in July. I think we won 5 or 6 baseball games. Everybody expected us to just sell out, trade, and there was a lot of people naturally wondering what we were going to do. We elected to stay with this group of players, continue to believe in them as we always have. We won 21 games in August. Didn't trade anybody. We won 21 games in August. And then Kane went down again in I think September. We won, might have won 9 or 10 games. But when Kane went down that last time, it really deflated us. We just couldn't overcome it.
What does Alex Gordon mean to this franchise, both on and off the field?
Alex Gordon, he's a winner in every sense of the word. He's an unbelievable father, great husband, great teammate, great son, and extremely prepared, emotionally very under control, in control. And he's always just played to win. He's never complained, and he's stuck with us from the very beginning, and really represents a Kansas City Royal or what a baseball player should be.
How difficult was it to trade Wade Davis this winter, given how good he'd been for you during this run?
Very challenging. Wader, we could not have won without his presence and his dominance in the back end of our bullpen. So it was very challenging to make that deal, as it was with Gerard Dyson. Dyce had been here from the very beginning. Him and I had been here together. We both came around the same time. And to watch him grow and mature on the field and off the field was extremely rewarding and a great example of perseverance. And, we couldn't have won without him either. So it was challenging to trade both of those guys. And, historically, Mark, especially since we began this run and again, get a group of players together, homegrown players, do everything we can to help win, we've traded very few major league players. We've traded, players in our minor league system, but we've traded very few major league players. This past winter, we traded some. It was challenging emotionally.
What kind of player do you think Jorge Soler can be?
Jorge has a chance to be a power-producing bat in right field. We all think he's just scratching the surface. He had a lot of success early on in his career. He grew up in with a great organization, with the Cubs, so he knows how to win and the importance of winning. And but we also know there'll probably be an adjustment period. He's going to change leagues. He's going to try to do too much. He wants to impress. And but we believe that he will be, we will be very happy with his production over the four-year period that we have him under contract.
You guys experienced a devastating loss with the death of your Donovan Ventura. What will you remember most about him?
Well, there's a lot of things that we'll remember about Yordano. Obviously, he had an infectious smile. He cared deeply about his teammates. He loved to compete. He overcame a lot, not only from an economic standpoint. He overcame extreme poverty and neglect at times, and to reach the highest level. And obviously, you have to have ability to do that, but you have to have an unbelievable desire to compete. And he had all of that. But we'll miss him. We spent a lot of time with Yordano. We got to know him very well, because of some of the maintenance that was required to help him develop as a player and as a man. So we all took our turns at pouring into pouring into his life and trying to help raise him. We embraced that. We enjoyed that. Personally, I would spend time with him every winter in the Dominican Republic. Rene Francisco and I would. Of course, Rene was there constantly, but I would make an advanced decision every single year to go spend time with him for a couple days in the DR, because we knew he grew up without a father, and so we all felt it was important to be strong influences in his life.
On a personal level, I'm sure it's going to take quite some time for you and everybody in the organization to cope with it and deal with it and get past it, if you ever do. Purely from a baseball standpoint, how difficult is it to deal with that type of sudden loss?
Well, there's very, I mean, you just, you can't replace that. You certainly can't. I mean, for, you know, we had him under a long-term contract. We had those costs fixed in our, with our financial projections for the future. Obviously, the talent is exceptional, and we felt, Mark, that he was just scratching the surface, continuing to get better. In this off, this past off season, he had he was extremely dedicated. He was at our academy on a consistent basis, working with Victor Baez. He was in great shape, and his commitment level was the best it had been in several years. He was a week away from coming to Arizona early to begin training, which he always did. But we were really excited about his future, and felt like that he had a chance to be a Cy Young Award winner someday.
You weren't the first team ever to have a big three in the back of the bullpen. Obviously, the Nasty Boys did it in Cincinnati in 1990.
Yeah.
But you've been credited with reigniting that trend. Is imitation the sincerest form of flattery?
No doubt. I mean, really, I mean, to me, you know, when we first came over here, we looked at, we were, I was a big admirer of Terry Ryan and Terry's ability to lead, remain consistent, build continuity within his staff. I respected that and wanted to model that. But I also looked at the Anaheim, whether the LA Angels when they won or the Anaheim Angels.
They were the Anaheim Angels,
Anaheim,
I believe.
Angels when they won. 2002.
Yep.
So I looked at them, and I love that style of baseball. We wanted to go, we wanted to steal bases. We wanted to go first to third. We wanted to score from second. We wanted speed and on base up the middle, power on the wings. We wanted a bullpen that could match up really well the last third of a game. The Angels had all of that in my mind during that period of time. And so, you know, that's really kind of how we wanted to build our team. Of course, Kauffman Stadium demands that you have athletes in the outfield. You've got to be able to run down a baseball at Kauffman Stadium. And so, it, you know, in our first deal was trying to acquire, you know, we acquired Joey Gathright because we knew that we needed those types of athletes in our ballpark.
How do you feel about the overall state of your farm system right now?
I feel good about our farm system. I know there's a lot of publications and that would rank our system at a lower level. But I believe in our players. I believe in our development people. I trust that we have young players that know how to play this game. They may not stand out. They may not grade out well with tools, although we have some players with some exceptional tools. But we have players that I think are, that I believe are committed to winning, and we'll learn what it takes to win. And ultimately, that's what matters the most, to be able to put a group of players on the field that want to win for each other and, you know, connect with your community and the fans. And that's what we're going to continue to work hard to do.
Last question for you. Mm-hmm. The American League has been represented by teams in your division in each of the past three World Series. Your team obviously accounting for two of those. How do you assess the American League Central this year and the immediate future?
Well, I think I believe the American League Central is a tremendous division. I really like what the White Sox did this offseason. Minnesota is reinvigorated. I mean, they have a new direction, and I don't know Derek well, but I've been impressed with him. And, of course, I've always liked Thad Levine, and they have ownership that's committed to winning. Of course, Detroit has always been very good. I mean, they've got they're proven winners. They dominated our division for years, and I've always respected Al and his ability to evaluate. And, of course, you know, Cleveland, what Chris Antonetti and Mark Shapiro before him, they've always been able to create such a great culture. And so I like the fact that all of those organizations are very healthy and have a great vision for the future of their franchise, because that's going to make us better here in Kansas City as we continue to work hard to compete with them.
Dayton, thanks very much for your time. Okay, good luck
thanks,
this
Mark.
Season.
Appreciate it. Thank you.